This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In a 1996 New Yorker article, jazz critic Whitney Balliot lamented that jazz was running in place. But, he said, a savior has been slowly materializing in the 90s, the astonishing tenor saxophonist and composer Joe Lovano. Last year, Lovano was voted Tenor Saxophonist of the Year in both the Downbeat Readers and Critics poll. In 1999, he won Album of the Year in the Jazz Times Readers Poll for his CD Trio Fascination Edition 1. Now he has a follow-up called Flights of Fancy, Trio Fascination Edition 2. It features him in four different trio settings with such musicians as drummer Joey Barron, trumpeter Dave Douglas, harmonica player Toots Thielemans, and pianist Kenny Werner. Before we hear from Lovano, let's listen to the title track, which was composed by Lovano and features Cameron Brown on bass and Idris Muhammad on drums. Music from Joe Lovano's new CD, Flights of Fancy. Joe Lovano, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, I think you were introduced to jazz by your father, who was known as Tony Big T Lovano.
Yeah, right.
Do people call him Big T?
Big T was his name, especially when, you know, when he was performing and playing. Yeah.
How big was he?
He was kind of a big guy. I would say he was a big guy. But he had a big, beautiful sound and a big heart. And his name was Tony. And they just distinguished him by calling him Big T because he had this very vibrant personality, you know. It wasn't just the size of him as a man. It was the size of him as a person. And
what did he play?
He played tenor saxophone. And he also played alto and the woodwinds. You know, he was... My dad was born in 1925 and grew up in the swing era and the big bands, and the bebop school was really his love and passion. He was in the army band and during World War II, and then when he came out of the service, really was one of the major contributors around the Cleveland, Ohio area.
Did he have a day job?
He was also a barber, yeah, and had a family. And
did he have his own barbershop?
Yeah, he had a number of barbershops through the years, you know, and businesses. And, you know, he didn't really want to travel and do the things that I've done, but he had a deep passion for the music and was a major player around Cleveland and played in jam sessions with John Coltrane in the early 50s. And played in nightclubs. Lindsay Skybar was one of the places that he played a lot, where he would play in the house band and play opposite great players like Flip Phillips or Stan Getz or others that would be coming through Cleveland.
A lot of people grow up really disliking and then rejecting their parents' music because it seems very old-fashioned to them. What did you like about your father's music?
Well, I have to say, when I was really young, like 5 and 6 years old, when he gave me horns, you know, altos, and then I got a tenor later when I was more like 11 or 12. But when I was 5 and 6 and hearing him practice around the house, that was what captured me. His sound, it wasn't the music that he played so much then. It was like this powerful, beautiful sound that he created that I used to just listen to him practice all the time or try reeds before he would go to a gig, you know. And that's what really got me into it, trying to develop and play, get a sound on my horn at the beginning, you know. And then I got into the whole conception about jazz and improvising through the years after that, you know. But at the beginning, it was mainly just that sound and being able to create that beautiful tone.
What was it like for you as a boy to try to capture that kind of big sound that your father got?
Well, it was pretty frustrating there. but the more I went and started to play, you know, and once I started to actually learn some songs, and he would bring me to rehearsals and jam sessions. And once I was a teenager, you know, 12 and 13 years old, I was starting to learn some of the tunes I was hearing him play. And once I was able to actually sit in and play with musicians in his generation and start to be accepted by them, by the way I played, then things started to move fast. You know, I started to really get deep into trying to learn some songs and some tunes. And learned from the records that I was listening to of Charlie Parker and Sonny Stitt and Sonny Rollins and John Coltrane, Miles Davis.
Now, I think Ted Dameron was one of the musicians who your father knew because Dameron was from Cleveland.
Yeah, Tad was from Cleveland, and his brother Caesar Dameron was an alto player who never really left the Cleveland area, and my dad knew real well. My dad played with Tad in the mid-50s when he would come home to visit or stay with his family during that time. Tad was somebody that I just grew up knowing his name and knowing that Bird and Diz played his music, you know, that he wrote for the Dizzy Gillespie Big Band. And just knowing that and trying to learn some of those songs, those complex melodies and harmonies, gave me a lot of confidence about who I was and where I was from, and that the music, it wasn't just there wasn't just a lot of imaginary characters from history books or something. You know, they were real people, and that gave me a lot of confidence to try to get myself together.
Well, you recorded
as a teenager, you know.
You recorded several Tad Dameron tunes on a recent CD called 52nd Street Themes, so I thought we could listen to one of those now. And this is, I think Tad Dameron's perhaps most beautiful composition, If You Could See Me Now.
And yeah, I love this song.
Yeah, so this is the Joe Lovano Nonet playing If You Could See Me Now. That's the Joe Lovano Nonet from the CD 52nd Street Themes. Joe Lovano has a new CD that's called Flights of Fancy. Now, your father was deep into music, and he was probably really pleased and even flattered that you were playing his instrument and listening to the same music that he lived. What about your mother? How did she feel about you going into music? Was she concerned about if you'd ever make a living, if you'd ever be good enough to, succeed as a professional?
Well, those questions always come up, sure. But my mom and my Aunt Rose especially, they were both like really big music lovers, and they knew all the songs that I was trying to learn. So they heard me practicing a lot more than my dad. They would open the basement door and tell me if I was playing something right or wrong all the time, you know. My aunt was a singer, too, when she was younger, so she knew all these tunes and all the lyrics, you know. So she would be singing along with me a lot of times, you know, when I was first learning some standard tunes, you know. So they were real encouraging, you know, and I would like to... You know, I'd try to be practicing when my dad came home from the barbershop, you know, so he could hear me, you know. So my lessons weren't real formal lessons like every Wednesday or every Tuesday. He would hear me practicing and he'd come down and tell me what I was doing wrong or if I sounded like I was moving in the right directions. You know, it was a real loose, very loose thing. And it was a lot of fun, you know. It was never anything about... you know, was I going to be able to make a living? I was playing gigs and working before I even thought about any of that. And subsequently, after high school, I went to Berklee School of Music in 1971, the year I graduated high school, and I made all the money to go for my enrollment at the college from playing gigs in high school.
If you're just joining us, my guest is saxophonist Joe Lovano. He has a new CD called Flights of Fancy, Trio Fascination Edition 2. Let's take a short break here and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with saxophonist Joe Lovano. He has a new CD called Flights of Fancy. Now, after learning in a very informal way from your father, what was it like to go to the Berklee School of Music, where the learning was going to be a lot more formal?
Well, at that time in 1971... I had, when I went to the school, I had already had a repertoire together of tunes that I knew, standard songs from the Broadway songbook, as well as Charlie Parker's music and John Coltrane's music. I was just starting to really learn and deal with that, you know. As a teenager, I mean, Charlie Parker's music really got me into the sound and the flow of syncopation and rhythm and playing through some deceptive harmonies, you know, that prepared me to go to Berklee. So when I went to Berklee and moved to Boston, I moved there with a few friends of mine, Ron Smith, who was a vibes player, we grew up together, and Carmen Castaldi, a great drummer, and another drummer, Cleve Huff. The four of us moved to Boston together and went to school. And we were all playing together in bands before we went. So it was there was a family vibe happening within us already when we went up to Boston. So it was a very comfortable scene. And I had a chance to study with Gary Burton in a really fantastic ensemble that he had. He was just starting to teach at Berklee at that point. So it was his first semester teaching, and I was placed in his number one ensemble with all the other players that were in their final semesters. So that was a big vote of confidence, and it was fantastic to work with someone like Gary at that period. We played music that he was recording and experiencing and exploring.
Well, now there's a new... endowed chair at the Berklee School of Music named in honor of Gary Burton, who you studied with, and you're the first person to be named to that chair. So you'll be teaching now at Berklee.
I know. It's such a deep honor and a very surprising thing that happened just recently. And I'm really thrilled about this position and appointment and looking forward to contributing at the school and also going back up there and studying more myself.
I think your first professional gig was with the organ player Lonnie Smith.
That was my first really professional jazz experience, yeah. Traveling in the States a little bit and recording, coming to New York and recording for the first time.
Yes, now you recorded an album with him called Aphrodisia. And I want to play a little bit of the title track.
Oh, wow.
This is from 1977. Joe Lovano, that sounds so 70s.
Well, it was. It was around 1974.
Well, how'd you feel about it at the time?
Well, you know, that particular tune, I hadn't heard or played until we got in the studio. You know, we were playing much more blues and straight-ahead jazz in the quartet. But Lonnie had a record contract with Groove Merchant Records, who wanted him to play more in that direction, and we kind of put that together in the studio. And there was a lot of overdubs and things that happened with those voices and percussion afterwards. We didn't record like that. That all kind of was produced by the producer of the recording. So it was.
Must have been surprising when you heard that.
Yeah, it was different. Yeah, it was different because we played just as a quartet, more or less, you know. And then all that was added later by the producers. They were trying to fill in, I think, a certain radio agenda, you know, to get some airplay. But it was strange because a lot of times we would go out after that and play gigs, and we weren't playing any of the music from the record. Lonnie didn't hardly know any of those tunes. We just put them together at the date for the session, you know. And I think a lot of sessions were done like that at certain points. In some musicians' careers, record companies tried to shape the date for you, you know. That's a big trap, and it happens today as well.
From 1976 to 79, you played with Woody Herman's big band. What did you like about being in a big band and being part of a horn section, not just being like the saxophonist in the quartet?
Well, you know, growing up with my dad, I always played two saxophones with him. You know, a lot of my lessons we play together, you know. And part of the whole thing about blending with others was part of our lessons, you know. It wasn't just technical things about what notes to play. It was how to play together with other people, whether it's with a saxophone section or with a trumpet player or whatever kind of ensemble you're in, with voices, with strings, percussion. And also it was a thing about playing with musicians in my dad's generation, too, that was something that really taught me a lot when I was a kid. So growing up and wanting to play with incredible leaders like Woody Herman was something I always dreamt about and strived for, and wanted someone like Woody to hear me and dig me, you know, dig my sound and where I was coming from. So to get that gig and to stay with him during his 40th anniversary period during that time in the late 70s was a real thrill and an honor, and I learned a lot about how to present myself as a leader, and to deal with the road, because we were on the road the whole time. We had like a week off at Christmas and a week off in the summer for over a 2.5 year period. I mean, it was all one-nighters the whole time, all over the world.
What'd you learn about being a leader?
Well, how to present a band. Woody was an amazing leader who let the members of the band shape the ensemble. You didn't just fill a chair and play your part. You had to do that for sure. But then if you could play a ballad, Woody would feature you in a certain direction. He would listen to everyone in the band and find their strong points and feature them in those areas, you know. And that's one thing that I learned about when I put bands together now, is to try to have everybody in the ensemble contribute with their personality and their abilities, you know. So as the personnel changes around you, the music changes too. You could play the same tune and have it be like a total new experience with different players.
My guest is saxophonist Joe Lovano. He has a new CD called Flights of Fancy. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is saxophonist Joe Lovano. He has a new CD called Flights of Fancy. You also played with Mel Lewis's big band, Monday Nights at the Village Vanguard in New York from 1980, I think, to 92. What was it like
to... That was amazing. That was really amazing. The way Mel would play and lead the band from the drum chair was amazing. Every soloist within the band played with an authority like it was their band. And Mel gave you that kind of feeling. He let you play and give you the feeling like, hey, man, this is your band when you're playing, you know? And that was amazing to be around. And I learned a lot about being a band leader again and the confidence about sitting in a saxophone section and exploring these amazing arrangements. But he was such a generous, beautiful, amazing spirit, you know. He played on my first recording as a leader that was called Tone Shapes and Colors on the Soul Note record label. It featured Dennis Irwin on bass and Kenny Werner on piano and Mel and I. And we recorded live in New York City here at the Jazz Coalition Center in 1985. And that was my first recording that I put together and produced as a leader. And Mel was just amazing. All of a sudden, he was playing in my band. And we were traveling around a lot. We played a lot in Boston and around the New York area. And we went out to Cleveland and played in Pittsburgh. So we, you know, over a period of about 2 years, we were working a lot that led up to this recording. And Mel was just incredible, man. I mean, he would make some gigs that didn't pay that much money and didn't even ask how much it paid. He just loved to play and was proud to be a part of our scene.
One of the trios on your new CD, which includes four different groups, is with Toots Thielemann on harmonica and Kenny Werner at the piano. How did you start playing with Toots Thielemann?
Well, I've known Toots for quite some time and heard him play so many different occasions. I did some nights with Kenny and Toots at the Iridium Club in New York last year. And when we played together, there was so much magic and so many things that were happening melodically through these standard songs that we played. It was just really a thrill. And this is what gave me the idea of putting a trios record together with some different trios, maybe exploring some of the same tune with different trios. Like on this recording, we play on Giant Steps, for example. And I start with the trio with Toots and Kenny, and we play on the tune Giant Steps, but we play it as a more of a romantic, beautiful song that it is. And that segues into a trio version featuring Cameron Brown and Idris Muhammad. And we treat it more straight ahead and more swinging in a different kind of way. So that was the first conception about putting a trio's record together with different groups was to explore this music and the different feelings that you could have playing through some of the same tunes, you know.
I want to thank you so much for talking with us, and I wish you good luck with your teaching position in the fall at Berkeley. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Terry. Thanks for having me on the show. It was a real pleasure.
Joe Lovano's new CD is called Flights of Fancy.